Welcome back to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon. We're glad you could join us for WDIY's monthly program on the culinary arts. I'm your host, Mike Drabenstadt. For the second half of the show, we are joined by Josh Palmer, owner of Setta Luna, an Italian restaurant on Ferry Street in Easton, and Maxim's 22, a French bistro on Northampton Street, also in Easton. Josh, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Glad to be here.
Josh, talk a little bit about, I guess, your origin story. How'd you get involved in the restaurant business?
Oh, geez, that goes way back. And, you know, I guess the origins, you know, how did I get involved in the restaurant business? It really goes back to how did I get involved in food? Growing up, you know, we spent a lot of time in the kitchen, you know, with my grandparents. And, you know, everybody gathered around the dinner table and everybody was involved. I remember times of, you know, making Christmas cookies. My grandmother and grandfather would start the weekend after Thanksgiving, and every weekend we'd be baking Christmas cookies until Christmas, and it would be the whole family and even extended family and friends decorating, rolling out, baking, boxing, because she would put together big trays and donate and things like that. And I just really got a strong appreciation for food, even before I really knew that this is what I wanted to do. It was just, food was very important and integral in my life. We had a garden, you know, we had cherry trees in the backyard. So you didn't waste anything. You valued everything that you had, you know, worked with farmers. And long before we even got to this farm to table thing, it just all made sense.
And then how that transitioned into a profession?
Well, my first job, other than mowing lawns when I was a teenager, when I started driving because I had to put gas in the car, was at a restaurant. For those of you who are of the age that can remember, down in Kintnersville was the Great American Grill. It was the place to be
back in
the mid to late 80s.
Been there, yes.
Yeah, it was hopping.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking mid to late 80s, and they're doing, you know, 300-400 covers on a Saturday night, which was unheard of. And it was a hip, cool vibe. You know, they had crayons and paper you could draw on the tables. And at that point, it was just a job for me. You know, aspirations of going off to college, and that turned into being a ski bum. you know, I guess when I really got serious about it is, you know, I started volunteering my time. I apprenticed two chefs that had an award-winning bed and breakfast. And Monique Gaumont-Lanvin, which is a really interesting story. She studied at Le Cordon Bleu with Julia Child.
Wow.
Not because she wanted ever to have a restaurant, but so she could entertain her husband's clients at their chateau because he was the heir to the Lanvin perfume empire. So that was an amazing experience. You know, I remember I was there for 4 or 5 months just going in a couple nights a week, and I got something to eat at the end of the night. That was my compensation. And finally they said, okay, now you're worth something. We can actually pay you. And I think about that, you know, it's, you don't see that happen too often anymore. Everybody's, you know, the immediacy of this generation is how much can you pay me? We negotiate pay before we even show what you can do. And
well, and also I want to work as a line cook, own a restaurant, and then be on Food Network in 2 years.
Right, right. Well, that, you know, when I got started in this, you know, it was not, you know, glamorous to be in the kitchen, you know. It was, you know, a lot of the rejects, the knuckleheads of society, you know, they were chain smoking, pot smoking, drinking, you know, every night life was a party. And now it's like with the glorification of the Food Network and everything, everybody's like, oh, it's glamorous to be a chef. Well, you know what? The people see the elite, the few that make it to that level. And it's not always the case. You know, I'm very fortunate to have two restaurants that people love to come in and I can, you know, cook them dinner every night. You know, that's really what it is. I always say, I'm a cook. I'm not a chef. I'm just cooking you dinner.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the restaurants. First, your concept for Setta Luna. I mean, Italian as a ethnic cuisine is, I think, America's favorite ethnic cuisine. I think year after year, it's either at the top or near the top. And there's it seems to be an Italian restaurant on every strip mall. How do you make Setta Luna different? I know it's not a conventional Italian restaurant, but how do you separate it?
Well, it's interesting. You know, people say, well, it's not traditional. It's not conventional. You know, I don't, you know, I liken us to, we say we're an urban Tuscan trattoria because it's, you know, it's really, it's, it defies any mold. But a lot of the people that would say to us, well, that it's not authentic, they're used to Americanized Italian food. So that's their concept or their view on what's authentic. They're thinking red sauce, you know, red and white checkered tablecloths. Well, actually, we're a lot more authentic. You know, I was just in Italy last August, and, you know, we're a lot more like the things I experienced there. And that's part of what I do is try to give you something that you can't get everywhere else. People say to me, you know, I just want a chicken parm. I'm like, you know what? There's probably 60 or 70 places in the Lehigh Valley you can get a chicken parm, and they have it on their menu and they do it day in, day out. So you're probably going to be much happier if you just go there and get it. That's not what we do. But what we do do are these things, and we always focus on our core of what we do. And we really don't delve into the things that we don't do, because there's always somebody out there who that's their thing, you know? There's always, like, you know, the cheesecake, the best cheesecake in the winter, cheesesteak, burger, this, that. So value everybody for what they do, and our niche is a little bit different.
So talk about some of the entrees that people would see on your menu.
Well, there's a lot of pasta. We make, I think we're unique in the sense that we've been making our fresh pasta since day one when we open. You know, I have guys down in the kitchen rolling out fresh pasta day in, day out, every day of the week, stuffed pastas. But as far as entrees go, you know, the ossobuco is really, like, I think synonymous with Italian, and people, you know, oftentimes you can tell if they don't know what it is. They're like, it's got a big bone. And I'm like, well, ossobuco means bone with hole. So if there isn't a bone, then it's not really ossobuco. And it's, you know, a lot of people say, you know, they want veal medallions, veal scallopini, veal francese, this. But, you know, there's not a lot of art in that. There's something about taking a lowly cut of meat, which is a veal shank, you know, and working your kitchen magic on it and making it something that's phenomenal, because it's tough. It needs to be braised all day until it's falling off the bone. So, you know, a lot of us in the restaurant business, you know, you can take a filet mignon and serve it and everybody's like, oh, it's great. But part of it is, you know, the culture of when we didn't have, and taking the cuts that nobody else wanted and turning them into something great.
And you've owned Setta Luna for how long now?
Just eclipsed 11 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about how the Eastern food scene has changed during that time.
Oh, radically. Radically. I think when we came into town, you know, there weren't a whole lot of reasons that people were coming to downtown Easton. And I think you could probably recognize that. You've been coming for just about 11 years now, I think.
Yes.
And you know, people say, they're like, you know, they thank me for everything that I've done. But I'm like, I don't know what I've done. I'm just making people happy, you know. It's like bringing good wine in, you know, making you something nice to eat. And if you're happy, you keep coming back. Well, what's, you know, people were driving to Easton for Setta Luna, and there were lines out the door. You know, people were waiting. I was amazed. I'm like, I would never wait an hour and a half or 2 hours to eat dinner. And people were waiting. And I think that's a testament to our product and what we had. And then as people were coming to Easton for the restaurant, they were walking around and checking out the other things that were there. And the Easton's really, people have started to invest, and more restaurants have opened up. You know, at another place like two doors down, and people would say, well, we can't get into your place, we're going to go down there. And it's kind of started to grow and blossom. And now it's really become a great dining destination.
And was that the impetus for you then to open Maxim's 22?
The impetus for Maxim's 22. I am a head full of visions and ideas and things. I never rest well, and there's always something that I want to do. We were ready to open up another restaurant. We're looking at going out of Easton and replicating Setta Luna. And it's such, I mean, it's a winning brand. People love Italian. And we're like, we could just do this really well. And, you know, I said to myself, it's not about the money. Like, cause we could do a bunch of Setta Lunas and they're all successful and do well. But for me, it's about, you know, the creative juices and creating something new. We brought this idea of the French bistro and brasserie, really, that people don't know about. And that's what it was for me, was something that wasn't already here.
Right.
Not only in Easton, but in the Lehigh Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you walk in there, and a lot of people come in time after time after time and wait till they see all the details. And I'm like, I agonized every night, you know, about each and every little detail and where things were placed.
Well, one detail is, where does 22 come from?
22.
There are pictures with 22. I noticed there are 22 beers on tap.
We have 22. Yep. That's not the origin of it, though. So I'm born February 22nd. My grandfather and my father, when they played football, were number 22. My grandfather actually played the first integrated bowl game ever. He played for Penn State after he came back from World War II, played the Cotton Bowl, 49. And my dad played football. He was number 22. So I'm born February 22nd.
So there's family significance, personal significance.
Yeah. When we opened up, my wife was born. She was a 22nd baby. Her twin daughters were 22nd babies. My son was born 11/11, and his name is Maxim.
So there we go.
You know, it's Maxim's 22. Destiny. You know, the building, we find out after the fact, the address is 322 Northampton Street. There's 22 apartments upstairs. It's originally Route 22. It goes on and on and on. So I said, there's going to be 22 seats at the bar, 22 draft beers. And we're just going to make this a thematic thing, the art room in the back for private dining seats, 22 people. So, yeah.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. So I know there was a time where French cooking was the gourmet cooking. But today you have chefs certainly doing things with Asian food or Mexican food or even Scandinavian food. So how do you keep French cooking relevant in the current environment?
It's interesting. A lot of people credit the French with really starting or establishing gastronomic. You know, there's, you know, volumes and volumes of French encyclopedias like Larousse Gastronomique, which was, you know, that was my Bible that I had when I interned. But what a lot of people don't know is that the Italians were really credited for bringing gastronomique to France. That's just one little microcosm. You know, it's a big world. You know, cuisines have been evolving all over and separately. What is really interesting and relevant is when you have, you know, a lot of the kitchens, you know, it depends what market you're in. You know, I mean, I've got a lot of ethnic Guatemalan guys in my kitchen, and we're blending things, you know, sort of from different cultures, but using French techniques and blending cuisines and flavors from different things. And that's really what's going on, is this great melting pot of all different styles, backgrounds, ethnicities coming together, but keeping it rooted in French. What we do is we could serve the classics, you know, but I think people have a certain appreciation for the classics, but they always want to push the envelope.
Right.
And we're like, wow, I never thought of combining, you know, hot peppers into French cuisine, because a lot of people don't think, you know, you don't associate spicy. But what people don't know is that France also shares a border with Spain. Okay. So there's the Basque region, and there are Chiles there. So we bring some of those things to there. And people are like, whoa, I never thought about this. And I was like, well, if you've ever been to France and you traveled by rail to Spain, you went through the Basque country and you realize that it's all there.
So in some ways, it's evolving back to where it always was. Right?
Exactly.
Well, Josh, thank you for joining us on The Inside Dish. And thank you all for being at the table with us for The Inside Dish. Join us again next month when we'll continue our exploration of the region's diverse and growing food scene with two new guests. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is Lehigh Valley Art Salon.